Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
We want to give a huge shout out to today's sponsor, Third Place Books, which is an indie bookstore with locations in the Seattle area, but more on them later.
Hi, Michael.
What is going on, Jill?
So much.
Too much.
How about you?
Super same. I mean, like, whatever. It's fine. Everything's good. Like,
yeah,
we're good.
I have a funny update for you today.
Please, this could be any subject.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to find out which one.
Someday we're just going to have to do a thing on social media where people are like, what do you think Jill is really like? Because I share all these stories and it just, it makes us sound like so wild and out there. But like,
absolutely,
we're 1,000% normal most of the time.
Yes. Yes.
Also, I'm not a crazy cat lady, but this is a cat update. You know, we foster cats.
Uh-huh. Says not the crazy cat lady.
Right. So we got back from vacation on a Sunday evening. And on the very next day, around lunchtime, Mark says, hey, I got an email from a fostering place. I said I would take a mama and some kittens. She had the kittens yesterday in a trap.
Oh, wow.
And I said, oh, okay. Well, that's fine. The last time we had a mama and baby, like, the babies climbed Penny's curtains and ruined them. But I haven't replaced them yet. And we'll just keep the doors closed. It was a learning experience.
Yeah.
That sounds fun. The kids love it. Mark was like, oh, do you want to come with me to pick them up? And I was like, no, PTO has hit the fan. I gotta get some stuff done before school starts. And he comes back. He walks in the office and I am like on a call with someone. And I can tell like he looks kind of frantic. So I'm like wrapping it up and I hang up and I like look at him and he's like, we might have gotten in over our heads. And like my internal voice is like, you're the one who agreed to this.
Yeah,
I don't get the text messages. Yeah,
exactly. Like, you told me what we were doing.
But like, externally, I was like really noncommittal. I was like, oh? And he says, the kittens were born earlier today. And the mom is feral.
Have you ever cared for a kitten that new?
We haven't had kittens that new. We've had kittens that were like 2 weeks old.
Yeah.
If the mom is momming, you really don't have to do much.
Sure.
It was more that he'd brought a feral cat into our house.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is happening? The thing I had been preparing for was that I had to go and talk to a bunch of parents who have kids who are doing sports at the middle school as the PTO president. I had to leave in like a half an hour. And literally what I was doing was like getting my information together. So I just look at him and I'm like, I don't know where to go with that. Like, no more things will come out of my mouth. And then he goes, well, like, I was having a really bad day and I was super busy at work and I got the text and I don't know if I didn't read it or maybe I just didn't read like the whole thing. And then he's like, where should we put him? What should I do with this? What should I do about that? What should... And I just like look at him from like the... I was like Paris Geller in her cardboard box.
Oh my gosh.
On Gilmore Perfect Girls. Reference. But like PTO. And yes. I just like look at him from my work cave. And I was like, I have to go be a respectable parent in charge in like 14 minutes. I am not talking to you about this right now. They're in a crate. I'll see you in 2 hours. So in the evening, we got them set up in the office and we got a litter box and all that. And we closed them in and we went to bed. Mark gets up early in the morning because he went and exercised and he came back and I had a doctor's appointment. So I left. I'm on my way back from the doctor's appointment. And thing to know about Mark is he's the most chill person ever.
Yeah.
Like my exact opposite.
Yeah, exactly. You and I have the same husband and they have the same spouse.
Yes. I get a text. Well, first of all, I get a call, but I was on the phone with my sister. So I hit decline. And then I hit decline a second time. And I was like, what is wrong with him? And then I get a text message that said, please call me immediately. I'm freaking out.
Oh my gosh. Where was he right now?
Like, never in my life has he ever said the phrase, I'm freaking out to me. So I was immediately like, I have to go right now. Bye.
Yeah. He like cut off his leg or something.
Yeah. I hung up on my sister and I get on the phone and he's like, where are you? And I was like, I'm like 5 minutes out. And he was like, I need you to come home right now. And I was like, is everything okay? And he was like, not really. I was like, are our children okay? What do you mean? It's like, you're freaking out and you need me to come home immediately. What happened to our kids?
Exactly.
And he's like, oh, nothing. They're fine. Okay. So in the future, lead with that. I pull in. He like meets me in the garage and pulls the door close behind him. And he goes, I think I've managed to pull this off with maybe like only one of the kids knowing what's going on. Like, what is going on? So it turns out Mama Cat was still in labor. She had two additional kittens while she was here. We were asleep.
What?
One of them did not make it.
Yeah, that happens.
And one of them did not look good.
Oh, shit.
And Mark was like, there's a dead cat, a cat that's clearly needs assistance. Three fine, like 12-hour-old kittens. He goes, and I spooked the feral cat. She came darting out of the box. She climbed my sound panels in my office and was like on the top of our bookshelf.
Oh my God.
And Mark's like, I called the rescue place. They want us to bring them back like right away so that they can treat the sick kitten. And he goes, I don't know how to get this cat out of the office. Like, we're standing in the garage and I'm like, a feral cat has given birth in my office. It is now stuck at the top of my bookshelf.
Poor mom.
Also in the room is a not doing well cat and one cat that didn't. Okay, this is a lot. So these cats went back to the shelter.
Yeah.
Then they called and were like, would you like to take them back? And Mark was like, no.
Why'd you even call?
No, we are not equipped to deal with that. So if you were ever wondering where my limit is, we found it.
Then you're pretty, you can handle almost anything then.
It was wild. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. Sounds like Mark was spiraling a little bit.
Oh, nicely done.
But today I thought we'd do something kind of fun where we're talking about author spirals. And what I mean by that is just that magical experience where you read an author's book for the first time, and it's so transformative that you dive headfirst into their other work. It's very different than, in my experience, it's very different than having just like loved a book separate from the author, and then something weird happening where you have to go read that author's other work.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've experienced a couple times in adulthood, several times in childhood, but I'm just curious, Jill, as we jump into this, what is your relationship with author spirals? What do you think of them? How do you define them?
Yeah. Author spirals are fun.
Yes. It feels like making a new friend.
Yes. And then I always have this like kind of love-hate thing with them though, because you're like, oh, I love this author. And you like go to get all their stuff. And then you get to the end and you're like, what do you mean this one book I read just came out 3 months ago and probably not going to get another one for 2 years? Like, exactly. What?
Yeah, you feel like personally affected by that.
Right? Like, I'm sorry, author. You owe me a book.
I need it right now. Like, give me the manuscript.
Yes. Yeah, I think they're really fun. Did you have any, like, growing up?
Oh, my gosh. Having author spirals in sort of, like, the middle grade stage of life is, like, much easier to come by because...
Oh, yeah.
Middle grade authors are so prolific, at least yeah. in my experience. And so when I was growing up a reader, if I loved a book by a certain author, I had a lot of work I was able to go back to. And yeah, a couple come to mind. I remember Roald Dahl was a huge one for me. I remember reading James and the Giant Peach and being like, this is absolutely unreal. I'm obsessed. I just like read so much Roald Dahl back to back to back because, I mean, I know, and I this is part of like why I want to have this discussion today is because like I really want to figure out what is different about it than other books that are my favorite books of all time, but then I didn't have author spirals, but I spiraled on Roald Dahl. And then in middle school, and I mean, I mentioned this in our middle grade episode, Margaret Peterson Haddix was really transformative for me. Mm-hmm. I read Among the Hidden, I think I was in sixth grade, and devoured it. And that was a really popular book among kids my age, especially then, but especially with boys. Like, that was a book a lot of the boys were reading. And luckily, I had a reader. I have a reader for a mother, and also she was the assistant librarian of my school. So she put on hold the Among the Hidden sequels and Takeoffs and Landings and Running Out of Time and Don't You Dare Read This, Mrs. Dunphrey. And I just read so much Margaret Peterson Haddix in middle school, then ultimately led me to like getting to meet her and like talk to her. And to this day, I love Margaret Peterson Haddix. But those are the two like huge ones when I was a kid that I just, after I read one of them, I had to read the rest of their work. What about you?
Your examples are such high quality and wonderful. I am now going to bring the quality bar down to the basement.
All right.
And embarrass myself. I thought of two author spirals I had as a child. I took a long, hard dive into the Sweet Valley universe.
Okay.
If you're not familiar, it's the Wakefield twins, Jessica and Elizabeth. They were tall, they were blonde, they were best friends. Jessica was like the outgoing, fun one, and Elizabeth was like smart and responsible. So, I mean, obviously stellar character development.
Naturally, yes.
They had read anything like a it. Nuclear family and like a hunky, popular older brother. I just wanted to be them in general. Yeah. I was obsessed with wanting an older brother for some reason. And, you know, in true reflection of every tween's life, interspersed with like dances and crushes and friendship issues were kidnappings, people in comas, accidentally killing your best friend in a car crash. And it's like General Hospital for 12-year-olds. I hope Francine Pascal is the gazillionaire because there were 181 books published.
Oh, my God.
I know. I had to look it up today. I bet I read like 160 of the 181.
We got to find the last 20 for you.
I know. I would probably reread them now as an adult.
Me too. I would. I was thinking about that too. Like when I was thinking about author spirals, I was like, I would go read all of Margaret Peterson Haddix today.
Yeah.
And I've reread Roald Dahl in my life before, but... you mentioning all of this, like a little bit lowbrow, reminding me of a series that I came across at a yard sale. I think it was our neighbor, and it was a book called Pee-wee Scouts. Do you remember this?
You and I have talked about Pee-wee Scouts.
Okay. I know I've talked about it before, but like, I've never, the covers are just like stand out in my brain because they're just like really like... not great. And I loved them. I mean... I think they come into my head maybe like once or twice a year. And they're another one where I just was like, once I got it off of from the yard sale, my mom just went and like got me the rest from the library. And I've only ever read them once in my life, but I read them like obsessively that one point in my life. I just love when that happens.
So I have to tell you, after you told me that story, I have been frequenting the Half Price Books near my house, and they have a whole, they have their kids' books. They have series together by series title, and then they have, then it's alphabetically by author last name. I look in the series section every time I'm in there to see if they have Pee Wee Scouts.
Oh my gosh. That really touches my heart. I never thought about doing that. I should do that too.
I'm dying to find one of these for you.
If you did, I think it would like be a real problem, because in a good way, like I would like, basically what I'm saying is like, you've spoken this into existence. And if it doesn't happen, I'm canceling our podcast.
Oh man, I might have to branch out from my one Half Price books.
That might be helpful.
So my second example is just as embarrassing.
Good.
And I had completely forgotten about this until John Green's The Fault in Our Stars came out. And then, okay, like, it all came rushing back. But for a while in middle school, I was absolutely obsessed with YA cancer novels.
Oh.
And, yeah, I know. Most of them were, like, girls with cancer. But, like, some of them had, like, cystic fibrosis or, like, maybe a very, like, early HIV story, because, like, it was the early 90s.
Sure.
Sometimes there was, like, a catastrophic accident or, like, organ failure. Lots of authors wrote in this genre, but Lurline McDaniels was like the queen of YA cancer books. I read them all, and she had one that I reread so many times about a girl who needed a bone marrow transplant, which is how she found out she was adopted.
This is for kids?
Yes! So here's why I say this. When I'm in the bookstore, we frequently get, I mean, several times a year. Like, if this happens once a month, I am 0% shocked. A parent comes in. It's always a mom. And she's like, can you help me find something? And she looks uncomfortable. And you're like, yeah, absolutely. What are you looking for? And then she leans in really closely to you and says, so, my child, and I will say this is very mixed between boys and girls, my child read The Diary of Anne Frank at school, and now she wants more books about the Holocaust. And it's always whispered. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. This happens all the time. I got a list for you. Let's go. I mean, you know, I have really high quality follow-ups for you. So whatever itch this scratches is clearly still a thing.
Yes.
And though instead of it being YA cancer books, it is currently the Holocaust.
That is wild. And I do remember, now that you say that, there is something about that. Maybe it's because it's the first time you were really like learning about any of this stuff.
And I have no idea.
Because I remember reading the Diary of Anne Frank and being obsessed with her experience.
Yeah.
And even like growing up Jewish, like we heard about the Holocaust all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still different, I think, because it was like a real world story.
Yeah.
And then you get kind of obsessed with the trauma of it, which is just like says something else about our society.
Right.
But yeah, wild.
Yeah. I think if you were a middle school girl in the early 90s, you know all about Lurline McDaniel. The books like flew out of the middle school library, and they were all taped together on the, you know, the paperback spine. Like, yeah, always absolutely had that big thick book tape on it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I've been garbage since way back.
You're the OG garbage person.
Yes.
I want to unpack this a little bit. I want to try and figure out like, why does this happen? And how is it separate from some of my favorite books of all time? And the best example I can give is Less by Andrew Sean Greer. We've talked about it several times in this podcast. It is genuinely in my top five favorite books of all time. Reading it, I knew that. I was like, this is one of the best books I've ever read. I haven't read anything else by him before that or since. It doesn't change the fact that it's one of the best books I've ever read.
Yeah.
However, later when I give some examples, some of their work are also some of the best books I've ever read. And then I just went crazy and read all of their other work. One of them isn't one of the best books I've ever read. I really loved it, but then I spiraled on their other work as well. Like, what is different about that experience? And then how, what for you, I guess, as a reader, like, when do you tap into that? Like, when are you reading a book and you're like, I've got to read their other work?
I feel like I accident myself into it.
Sure.
If that makes sense. One of my examples we're going to talk today, I literally was an accident, but also I don't think I set out like, oh, I want to read the rest of this stuff. It seems to happen to me a lot when I have gotten somewhere and I have not brought my book with me.
Okay.
Or I finish a book and then I'm like, okay, I wasn't expecting to finish this right now. What am I going to do now? Like, I didn't have a plan in place.
Gotcha.
And so then I start, you know, just kind of like poking around and being like, oh, well, if I like this and I like this, what else might I like? And then you'll happen upon like another book by that same person.
Okay.
But I don't know that I ever really set out, like never a purposeful about it. And I kept thinking about when you read those four seasonal books.
Yeah. The Seasonal Quartet by Ellie Smith.
Yes. And how purposeful you were and like starting at the beginning. And I feel like I'm never as thoughtfully organized as that in it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, but I also think that this is really interesting because the difference for me is when I am intentional with it. Like, and also I think when something has surprised me, like, like reading less, I was like, yeah, I'm loving this. And I've heard so many good things, like, I'm going to love it. And then I did. And then it's one of my favorite books of all time. Other books I've read when like I'm not expecting to have such a specific reading experience with it is when I'm like, there is something really special about this author. I'm not ready to be done with them once I'm done with this book. I'm going to keep reading their work for as much as I can.
Yeah.
Is the biggest difference for me, I think, when I spiral on an author versus like a book series or just loving a book in general.
Do you ever get worried when you really like what a book that when you spiral, you're going to be disappointed?
Yes, and it happens every time.
Right?
Like, that's part of the problem. But also, like, I end up, like, leveling out. Like, the next book is never as good as the first one. And then the third book levels me out. And then I'm like, okay, you know what? Like, no, that second book was really good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So I have like, one of those today, too.
Me, too. All three of mine are that way.
Love it.
But I just, it's fun to find a new favorite author, not just new favorite book. And I think every single one of the authors I've listed, I've talked about on here before, but not like the impact they've had on my reading or writing. So I'm just excited to talk about it. I'm excited to hear what you've brought.
Me too. What's your first one?
Okay, so this will be no surprise. I've cried about her. I've talked about her. It's my girl, Jacqueline Woodson.
Yes.
The first book by her I read was called Another Brooklyn. And it's not written in verse, but it's kind of written in prose. Like it's really short paragraphs, follows these four best friends as they grow up in Brooklyn and the different experiences they have as young girls and then into adulthood and the different ways and why they kind of grow apart in really natural ways that happens to everybody. And I had been wanting to read this for a long time. But not like in any urgent way, but in a way like I'd keep seeing it in a bookstore and think, oh yeah, I've been wanting to read that. I should. And then period. That was the end of the sentence. Finally, one day I just decided to buy it because I love the paperback cover. It's like I actually think the paperback cover is way better than the hardback cover.
Ooh.
And I read like the first four paragraphs, like the first like two pages, and I just was like shocked at how immediately honest and raw it was, and that it was doing what I love, which is telling friendship stories. And I think that that's what Jacqueline Woodson is so good at, is emotion that isn't saccharine.
Yeah.
And writing sentiment without being sentimental. And I just found myself over and over again getting really emotional, and knowing that I wasn't done with her with this book. So then after having loved Another Brooklyn, I just spiraled on the rest of her work. And I did, I think this is in order. I did Brown Girl Dreaming, The Day You Begin, Red at the Bone, Harbor Me, If You Come Softly, and then her most recent work, Before the Ever After.
Oh, wow. You've taken a
deep dive.
Deep dive there. Yeah. What was the experience like reading all of those other titles? I mean, you've got a really wide range there. Books yeah. that are in verse, books, adult books that are not in verse, and a picture book. So what was that experience like after the first book?
Yeah. Okay. So how I said the next book always was a bummer compared to the first experience. So that I, as I'm saying this, I realize isn't true. I mean, I'm actually really glad that I didn't start with what is, I think, probably her most celebrated work, which is Brown Girl Dreaming. Mm-hmm. I started with what is my favorite, Another Brooklyn, and then went into another unbelievable book, which was Brown Girl Dreaming. And those two are my favorite. Like she, yeah. one right after the other, where I was like, she can't do wrong. Like, I don't know an author who like is so intentional with her word choices the way that Jacqueline Woodson is and gets so much out of doing so little. It felt like a pleasure getting to read her books. And then The Day You Begin was the next one. It was her first picture book that I'd read mm-hmm. and was a really great bridge between what I'd read and what I was about to read.
Yeah.
And The Day You Begin is a delight. I think it's such a good start of school book.
That is one of my top pick books for, yeah. I don't know exactly how old that book is, but it's been out.
I think it, yeah. Well, I think it came out when I was just starting at the bookstore.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's a little bit on the long end for a picture book. And so I yeah. think sometimes if you pull it out to hand sell it, people are intimidated. And I'm like, no, 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 you don't understand.
Yeah.
Jacqueline Woodson can write a picture book this long.
Yes.
Like no one else can.
Yeah, sorry.
But it's so good and you're going to devour every word because it's so deep.
Exactly. And you devour every word. And then I read Red of the Bone that summer, which is her most recent adult fiction and also very highly acclaimed. Generally, people really love it. It's not my favorite Jacqueline Woodson. And that was the first experience of being like, this is the best writer ever. She can't do any wrong. And like, that's my fault. Like, I put her on this pedestal that then yeah. like she was able to write a very good book. And in my head, I was like, this wasn't very good. So then I was able to step away from it for a second and be like, actually, I really like that book. It made me think. It was very subtle and it offered a really interesting conversation between the two of us.
Yes.
But I think was a necessary step for me to take in like leveling out my experience with Jacqueline Woodson. Because mm-hmm. then, you know, I read Harbor Me, which is such a sweet middle grade book. If You Come Softly is a kind of an older one of hers. I think it's from the 90s. And then finishing up with Before the Ever After, which is another book in verse that I didn't actually think I was going to be that into, and then was so emotional reading it.
Yeah, I was not super into Jacqueline Woodson in the way that you were when we got approved for her interview. I had read The Day You Begin, which is a picture book, and she's got another picture book.
Oh, yeah.
That the name is escaping me.
It's called something.
It's also really well done.
It's delightful.
Yeah. And I was just familiar with those. And I had not read any of her longer form items. And then you told me a million times, read Another Brooklyn. And I don't remember why that didn't happen. But I read Red at the Bone. My favorite part of that book was our conversation about it. It wasn't a good fit for me.
Yeah.
While also still loving our conversation about it. Like,
totally.
Yeah. I don't know if that even makes any sense. Like,
no, that does make a lot of sense to me. That's happened a lot to me on this podcast. Our conversations bring out a different emotion for me than the one where I read it. It doesn't change how I felt about the book, but
yeah.
It just adds a layer to my experience with it. That means I definitely didn't hate it.
Yeah.
I think I know what happened with Another Brooklyn and not reading it. I think it's called, it was like literally the very beginning of the pandemic and it was hard to remember to do anything. So give yourself a break.
Probably. That tracks. I will say I did go back and read Another Brooklyn after we talked to her and also Brown Girl Dreaming and loved both of those.
Yeah, Brown Girl Dreaming is, I mean, and I've talked a lot about Another Brooklyn. It's like a hand sell to me for all of my friends But Brown Girl Dreaming, like every good thing you've heard about it, it's true.
Yeah, it is definitely a book that lives up to its hype.
Yeah.
It's got all those medals on the cover for a reason.
Yes, exactly. And that's one time that I'm okay with it.
So, Michael, it is the beginning of the month, which means we have a new indie bookstore to highlight.
Yes.
This month's bookstore is Third Place Books. They have three great locations in the Seattle area, each with their own really cool neighborhood flavor.
Yeah, we have had so much fun in getting to know them the last few weeks. They are incredibly community focused and have a real passion for the bookselling and book buying community.
I couldn't agree more. Their author events manager. Hi, Spencer. We were talking about this language that we lapse into when we speak with other book people, and it's so true.
Yeah.
They set out to make the store a third place, a community gathering point, and it shines as a place to make connections, not only with books and book lovers, but readers and the community as a whole.
Totally, totally agree. And also, their Books to Students campaign continues to put books into the hands of their local public school district and two local nonprofits for kids impacted by COVID. I really love how their customers showed up in a huge way for this program. We've also got more information about it on our website.
I so hope that our listeners check it out. To date, they have raised over $100,000 for this program. If you are local to the Seattle area, please check out any. No, I'm going to say all. You must go to all three locations. Report back. We want the intel. And the rest of us will head over to their socials. You can find them at thirdplacebooks.com and on Instagram and Twitter at thirdplacebooks.
Okay, that's one of mine. What have you got for me?
My first author spiral that I can kind of remember as an adult was John Green.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I read Paper Towns. While I was on maternity leave with Pippa and Truman, it came out in 2008 and I really enjoyed it. And so then from there, I read Looking for Alaska, which had come out in 2005. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is also amazing.
Talk about an amazing debut too.
I know, right? And then I read An Abundance of Catherines that had come out the year before. And everybody had warned me like, oh, that one's not good. And I was like, oh, okay. But I liked it.
Good.
I don't know. That's an unpopular hot take. But I loved them all. And so then I started watching Hank and John's YouTube channel. And they had this rule that none of their videos could be like longer than 4 minutes.
Wow.
Which was like perfect. That was exactly the amount of time I had because I had two infant twins. You know, like I was just drawn to how in the books and like on the channel, and I'm guessing here because I don't know John Green, but it just seems like this is kind of at the essence of who he is.
Right.
But he takes complex topics and treats them complexly.
Yes.
It's not like I'm trying to dumb this down. I'm going to try to make it easy. It's like, this is hard and complicated. And like, let's just start by acknowledging that, you know, like no one person is going to have all the answers. And I feel like teens have complex thoughts and feelings and relationships, and they can talk and have valid opinions about big things and hard things. And people miss that teens are really interesting people and they are experiencing so many things for the first time. Like their takes are so insightful. How often can a kid just like cut you to the core with their like playing back to you the way something works? And you're like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I just hate when people approach teenhood and things that teens are interested with the assumption that they're not smart and they're not capable. And that condescension is just misplaced. And totally. John Green writes for the teens I know and like the teen I was.
Mm.
So that's what connects for me, you know, like,
yeah,
You're a real person, even though you're 15. You're a real person and you're 15.
Yes, absolutely. Especially because, like, there is a weird double standard there when a lot of people reach adulthood that, like, really dismisses a lot of teenage interests or activities or what they happen to like in pop culture as, like, lesser than. But then when you look at yourself as an adult, it's like, sorry, but you're probably just, like, rewatching your favorite four shows from when you were a teenager. Like,
yeah.
Why is that a different experience than what kids are going through now?
Yeah, Nick at Night is a thing for a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about your experience. What was it like reading his other work after you had first read Paper Towns?
Because the first two I really liked, it was really great. I was like, John Green is my favorite author right now. Like,
yeah.
I like everything he has out.
Right.
I read The Fault in Our Stars, and I enjoyed it not as much as the other things. And then I read Turtles All the Way Down and just felt like it was not good. So I can't tell whether, I mean, of course, I'm a different person. We're talking about, like, a 12-year time span, you know, like,
sure.
I started with zero children. I have four children. I'm that much older. Like, am I just experiencing the book from a different perspective, or are they different? And I don't know what the answer is.
I like that you're saying that, because I do think that it can be one or both of those things at the same time.
Yeah.
And I have read a handful of John Green. I read Looking for Alaska first. And then I read The Fault in Our Stars. I mean, I haven't read a lot of his work. And then I read Will Grayson, which you've read as well.
I have read that one as well.
And then also Turtles All the Way Down. And I read Looking for Alaska when I was in high school. And kind of what you were saying, like, it was the first book from, like, the spirals you had as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first book that was, like, really intensely devastating that I'd read, like, for people my age, about people my age. And I remember being, like, not knowing where to place this emotion that it had brought out in me and really loving it. And I still think Looking for Alaska is, like, one of the best young adult books ever written.
I agree.
And one of the best debuts I've ever read.
Yeah.
And then I remember reading The Fault in Our Stars, having the expected emotional reaction. It was very sad. Cried a lot reading it. And then almost immediately feeling like I had been manipulated.
Mm.
Because, like, first of all, I want to say the reason he wrote it is very honorable and based off of someone he knew in real life. So what I'm about to say is not, like, necessarily fair. And I want to say that out loud. But when you put two dying teenagers at the center of your story, like, you're not going to have to work very hard to make me feel emotional about it. That's emotional. Do you know what I mean? So I always feel like he was always better than that, but that's easily his most popular book.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that, I think had an impossible task of pleasing everyone with whatever his next one was going to be, which ended up being Turtles All the Way Down. And the thing with John Green, with me, is that he will always be a very technically talented writer.
Yeah.
He's really good at his craft, but I agree that I just thought Turtles All the Way Down, like, wasn't his best and not all the way there. But it's hard because that's the last thing in your brain, because it's his most recent work, to remember, like, he's a very talented and very good writer.
Well, and this is completely, this completely slipped my mind. I just finished his newest book, The Anthropocene Review.
Oh my God.
Which is based on his podcast. I don't know how I completely forgot that in this conversation. But there we are.
Okay, so what'd you think?
I loved it.
Good.
I loved it. And that's nonfiction. So, you know, that's, like, a completely different thing for him. I was a fan of the podcast.
Yeah.
I find weird facts deeply interesting. And so,
especially when people who find them interesting are telling them to me.
Yes. And he somehow just nails, like, the right details.
Yeah.
So you're like, yeah, I want to know the history of the Piggly Wiggly.
I've always wanted to know that.
Yeah, it is an amazing effect that 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 concept seems to have on me, but they're not particularly long. You know, on the podcast, I think they're like 12 minutes long. And you're like, how could I not know the story behind Post-it notes? Like, this is a thing I've needed to know for my entire life.
That's genius, too. Like, short episodes like that.
I feel like I say this a lot, but I love well-done, interesting things that have short chapters or are short.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I ingest them. Like, that's how my time is chunked right now. And so it's you feel very satisfied in getting to a natural stopping point.
Oh, my gosh. Totally agree. That's why I love short stories. It's like, when you're feeling intimidated by a novel, then just read a short story. And you did it. You read a story.
Yeah.
So would you say, it sounds a little bit like maybe Fault in Our Stars and Turtles All the Way Down were your leveling out period.
Yeah.
But also, I think there's room to be like, well, this one wasn't as good as his other work. That doesn't mean it's not a very good book. It's hard. It's hard not to do that. It's hard not to compare an author to their other work and then decide, like, since it wasn't as good as that one, is it any good?
And the thing that's hard, I think, about Turtles All the Way Down, and I think you and I have discussed this.
Yeah.
It feels like there's at least one really good novel in there. Maybe two. And so I think that's the part of it for me where I'm like, this did not come together for me as a cohesive package.
Absolutely.
But there were so many elements that I liked that I wanted it to. So it's just one of those books where I feel like I want a do-over button for it, but that's not fair. Like,
why not? We shows get remade, get reboots, movies get reboots. Let's. I mean, it's a lot more work to reboot a book. John Green, get going.
What else do you have?
So my next one is Lauren Groff. Mm-hmm. I was introduced to Lauren Groff through my book club. My friend Lily, our friend Lily, it was her turn to select a book, and she picked Fates and Furies by Lauren Groff. It was like a love story told from both perspectives. So I was like, okay, been there, read it already, cool.
Yeah.
Wow, like how just like ignorant of me. And we had gotten it, and Josh had started it before I did, and I just happened to be working on a short story that I was writing. And I'd asked Josh to read some of it. I'm realizing now, like, what I'm about to say, and I don't feel this way about myself.
I love that we're just, I'm saying this, but I don't mean it.
Josh said to me, and I'm not trying to be like, well, he said, like, I know you haven't started it yet, but this reads a lot like the book club book. Like, the writing style is very similar. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay, like, can I read it? And so he pulled me up the book, and I was just like floored by the way she wrote. I mean, the first two or three pages of the prologue is unlike anything I've ever read and was really like fun to read. Her word choices were just knockout. And then I devoured Fates and Furies. To this day, is the best book I've ever read. Like, not top five, not top three, is the best book I've ever read. So much so that I emailed Lauren Groff and was like, hi, like, just like really like stupid, was like, you probably get this all the time. Barack Obama has like put you on his list of books to read. So like, I get it that you're not going to respond, but your book like awakens something in me that that had been dormant for a long time. And I'm just really thankful. And I really needed to like tell you, thank you for writing this book. I'm trying to write myself, and I get really insecure and get in my own way all of the time. And this just was really helpful. And she wrote me back in like 12 hours and wrote the most beautiful response, like gave me some really thoughtful advice, and like to the point where I have it screenshotted on my phone, and I just like read it every once in a while because it's so sweet.
I love that.
Yeah, it was really transformative for me. And a combination between like that book truly being the best book I've ever read and her being such a generous person and author made me spiral. And I read Florida and Arcadia, and I read, she has a ton of short stories out. So I just like devoured a shit ton of her short stories and have now pre-ordered her new book, Matrix, which by this time has been out for a couple months. The experience reading her work after Fates and Furies was very peaks and valleys, you know, like, naturally, nothing's going to be as good as what I have decided is the best book ever. So when I read Arcadia, which was one of my friend's favorite books of all time, I was a little bit disappointed. I was like, okay, this is good. It pales in comparison to Fates and Furies, in my opinion. And I'm kind of sad about that. Like, I'm mourning the experience I had with Fates and Furies. And that was so unfair of me because they're not the same book. Like, the same writer wrote it. That doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
I then was hesitant to get into Florida, a collection of short stories that we also read for book club. But thank God Arcadia happened, because then I just fell back in love with her and was able to give her the space to be dynamic and diverse in her writing style and ultimately just really love.
Here's what I'm hearing that's really interesting. All of the authors that we have talked about so far have crossed out from their original either demographic or genre and write. One of the things we enjoy about them is the variety of what they're creating. Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And Fates and Furies, when I read it, was her most recent work. So I was placing upon her an expectation that she had worked towards.
Yeah.
Which is unfair. All of her work before that led to my experience reading Fates and Furies. And that is only, I think, indicative of a really talented and successful writer. I also didn't have the research. I should have looked it up, but Fates and Furies was a very specific. She had never written anything quite like Fates and Furies before. And that was like part of the whole marketing of it and everything. But I was just spellbound by it, that reading the stuff that came before it was something that I want to go back and reread, because I know that my experience with it will be different.
Gosh, that's so interesting. I feel like I need to read more of her work.
Yeah.
I have not spiraled on her, but it sounds like I should.
We were very divided in book club.
Oh, interesting.
Like five of us, it's the best book we've ever read. One person couldn't finish it.
Oh.
And other people think it was fine, but pretentious.
Oh.
Yeah. Which I think
I love reading books where people are polar opposites about it for some reason.
Yes, same.
What is it about that quality that's like?
we are confrontational at heart, I guess.
I guess.
I think pretentious is really unfair, because I think she's just like a master at the kind of writing she wants to do. It's very literary. Like, it's literary fiction with a capital LF. And I think that we've ridden the wave of assholes who only read literary fiction and assholes who won't because it's literary fiction. Like,
yes.
we can meet in the middle and decide that we are not assholes if we read literary fiction. You know?
Yes. Yes.
Or write literary fiction.
I will say, I think the last time you and I had this conversation, we talked about Cormac McCarthy. And yeah. I have never gotten so many pleasant notes from people who are like, I also don't get it, and I am also smart. And I was like, yes, I found my people.
Yeah. I will, again, go on the record to say, fuck Cormac McCarthy.
Yes. I understand what he's saying. When I say I don't get it, it's not that I don't understand. Don't get it.
Exactly.
It's that I don't get why you like it.
Gentlemen. Dudes love Cormac McCarthy. Love to say they love Cormac McCarthy.
That's true. I do wonder, like, how many of them actually like it. And, like, absolutely. Maybe some of them haven't read it, but it's, like, the thing to say.
Yes. For them, it's, like, a conversation starter. And for me, it's an absolute conversation ender.
Yeah. I agree.
Hit me up with your next one.
Okay. As our listeners know, this one happened 1,000% by accident. It's Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Oh my gosh, this is the second time today that I'm talking about Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Oh, really? People.
Yeah.
Well, so I listened to Malibu Rising on audio on purpose for the podcast. Yeah. I thought it looked good and I wanted to read it. And I was at the kids' swim practice and I didn't have my like TBR list handy of what I wanted to listen to next. But I also knew I had like another 90 minutes at the pool. So like I clicked on Libro FM's like, if you liked it, you might also like page.
Sure.
I was immediately drawn to The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And the cover is just gorgeous. She's this blonde woman wearing this, I mean, amazing emerald dress. And the reviews were fantastic. It had so many accolades. So I was like, great. I bought it. I downloaded it. not realizing at all that it was Taylor Jenkins Reid. 0%.
Accidental spiral.
Then, after we talked about it for the podcast recording, I thought, this is so embarrassing, I am setting the bar so low on this episode. This one should be called, like, the one where we find out Jill has no credentials and no business being here. I got confused, and I thought she was the author also of Such a Fun Age, which I had read and loved. But that's Kylie Reid.
Correct.
And I'm an idiot. And I'm not going to tell you when I discovered that, but let's just say it was after you and I discussed it and before this moment right now.
Wait. I know, we won't go into it. But when you say after we discussed it, you mean on air?
Yes, you and I discussed The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo and Malibu Rising on an, I don't know where we are in time, on an episode of the podcast this season. I am really hoping that I didn't mention Such a Fun Age, because I literally had in my mind all three of those were together and by the same person until 90 minutes ago.
What? This is, I need like breaking news sound.
So embarrassing.
This just in. Like, I don't think you did. I don't think you mentioned Such a Fun Age.
I hope not. I mean, it's like so embarrassing. No, I just got confused. I thought they were by the same person. If anyone else was confused, Taylor Jenkins Reid is the author of Malibu Rising, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, and then the other book that you're like, but wait, there's one more. It's Daisy Jones and the Six.
Correct.
It's not Such a Fun Age. They came out around the same time. And so that's why you got confused.
Yeah.
That's why I got confused. I'm just here to clear this up for you.
Gotcha.
Anyway, I like that both of the books she actually did write are long arc novels that like span a lifetime and have a big cast of like complex characters. And I like seeing things from multiple narrators and being in the present and having flashbacks. And I'm really drawn to seeing an event from like multiple understandings. It just makes me feel like I get the character more and I understand their choices and motivations. And then just like her personally, because I follow her on Instagram, so you think I might have noticed she never mentioned the book she didn't write. But she's talked about the commodification of fiction featuring female characters, and especially those whose lives include like superhuman things like being in love or being with their female friends. Right. And as an industry, we're interested enough in them to publish them and sell them, but not into them enough to take them seriously.
Right.
And I just, you know, that's a big thing for me. I love Hallmark movies and literary fiction. I can be both things.
Yes. Snaps
and,
for Jill.
You know, you can be smart and interesting and also like garbage. And just, you know, being taken quote unquote seriously is kind of a choice. You can be all the things. And her characters are complex women who also who fall in love, but also have like really deep things going on, like, you know, exploring familial responsibilities and the complexities of being a bisexual in Hollywood in the 1960s. It's, we are a multitude, but we are not about Such a Fun Age.
And we are not Kylie Reid.
Which I also enjoyed. I just want to put that out
there. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay. So I know you talked about this a little bit in that episode, but with some time, like what was, so you said it was an accident.
Yeah.
What was the biggest difference in the experience reading it? And then I know that we've talked a little bit about, you've made some space for Evelyn Hugo to be better than you initially thought.
I think I am not well suited necessarily from rolling immediately. Like it finished and 35 minutes later, I'm reading the next one by the same author.
Totally.
I don't think I'm well suited for that. I text you a lot when I finished a book and I'm like, hey, I finished blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it really takes me some time to work through my thoughts and feelings on a book.
Yeah.
And I did not leave space for that. I was so focused on being efficient with my time that I didn't just sit there and enjoy having finished the first book. And so I took all of the feelings and expectations that were in the first book, and I started the second book like right off, you know, right at the get-go. I had all of that. And I think it really kind of muddled my thinking about the book.
Sure.
Because after you and I talked about it, several people at the pool I saw this summer were reading it, and I've had some conversations about it now. And I'm like, man, that is a really good book. And I came to it all wrong. And I want to reread this book now because I brought to it things that were not related. And when I think about it now, there are really important things being explored, and I don't think I was paying close enough attention to them. And also, once I got to the end and saw like where we were going, it was interesting that I want to go back.
Sure.
And just view it again. I have completely changed my mind about how I felt about it.
I love that. And I love what you say about like you aren't suited for like immediately diving into another author's work that you've just finished. Mm-hmm. And if I'm learning anything from this conversation, is that like that maybe none of us are or should be like because it makes us judge them unfairly because we're comparing it less on its own and more on that person's other work, which is interesting. I think there's something interesting about expectations and perception.
Mm-hmm.
When we do that, my boss who listens to this podcast, hello, Amy.
Hi, Amy.
We were talking about this earlier. She had said like, I listened to your episode where Jill was talking about Taylor Jenkins Reid. And I was like, oh, okay. Like I knew she had said she read her books as well. And I asked her what her thoughts on it. And she said she had the same experience, but starting with Daisy Jones and the Six. She read Daisy Jones and the Six.
Yeah.
Did not expect to like it. She was like, I don't care about rock stars. I don't care about like their drama, anything like that, and then loved it, and also really loved Evelyn Hugo, but didn't love Malibu Rising. She said like her feelings of pace that you had with Evelyn Hugo, she felt with Malibu Rising, which is just like another like level of like just like
that's
this is so
interesting. Yeah,
I'm dying. I mean, truly, everyone is talking about Taylor Jenkins Reid right now. Like I haven't read anything by her. I think I need to just maybe she's my new spiral.
Yeah, I have not read Daisy Jones and the Six, but I want to now.
Yeah.
But with this, like, now that I've had a break, like, I feel ready to approach it because it's so bad now because we record these. Like, my thoughts about it are out in the universe. And now if you ask me about it, I feel like, no, I don't believe any of that.
No, you were actually really generous because even in it, I think you left room for this moment.
Yeah, because it was definitely coming.
Yeah.
For sure. What's your last one?
So this one I'm a little bit embarrassed about, not because it happened, but because it took me so long to get there.
Well, thank God, because I've embarrassed myself about 17 times so far today. So let's hear it.
It's Judy Blume.
Oh, stop. Who's embarrassed about liking Judy Blume? She's an icon.
Exactly. What I'm embarrassed about is that it took me into my adulthood to read anything by Judy Blume.
Really?
That's embarrassing, right?
I don't know if it's embarrassing, but like, I don't understand how you escape childhood without reading Judy Blume.
That's actually the better question.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it happened.
All right, hit me. What'd you read first?
So she was coming out, I think this was like 2014 or 15. She had a new book for adults coming out called In the Unlikely Event. And it was only her second book she'd ever written for adults. Well, second book she ever published for adults. Mm-hmm. And I found that really fascinating because she is known as a beloved children's author, middle grade author. And since I just like happened to not read any of her stuff growing up, I just didn't look for it again as an adult.
Yeah.
So I knew that I really wanted to read In the Unlikely Event. I thought the cover was really charming. I thought the premise was interesting. So if you don't know what it's about, it is about a woman named Miri, who in 1987 returns to her hometown of Elizabeth, New Jersey to attend a commemoration of what is called the worst year of her life. And ultimately, it's like the worst year of everybody's life in that town. Mm. 35 years earlier, when Mary was 15, a succession of airplanes fell from the sky, leaving into their community. And back to back to back, which led to like, a ton of conspiracy theories. A lot of like, are the Russians doing this? Like, what's happening?
Wait, is this a real thing that happened? And then she based a story on it, or it's all made up?
So as I'm reading it, that was like my one criticism. I was like, this is so good. I love, she writes so to the point. Like, she's not a very flowery writer. She writes like very directly, which I found really compelling. So many different perspectives, ranging in age. And I love the setting a lot. The one thing I was like, this is kind of outlandish. Like, three planes falling from the sky in this tiny town in the same year? Like,
yeah, that's wild.
You're asking me to believe too much. And then I finished the book, loved it, keeping that criticism in my mind. And then, like, one of the last pages is about how this was based on an experience that Judy Blume had growing up.
What?
Isn't that wild?
I love everything about that.
So I was like, this is incredible. And
I thought I didn't like about it, I do.
They were like, well, like, shut the fuck up, Michael. Like,
this is Judy Blume.
Yes. I really loved it. It was one of the books that, like, I'd been kind of in a reading slump and immediately took me out of it. And then I just devoured so many of her other books, two of which I want to talk about specifically, were Tiger Eyes and Summer Sisters. Mm. And because those are the next two that I read. And I probably shouldn't have done Book for Adults and then Middle Grade and then Book for Adults again, because I had put on, like we've said, like a lot of expectations on this book for middle graders that like just it wasn't its job.
Yeah.
And I really liked Tiger Eyes in retrospect. And I really want to reread it. And then I read Summer Sisters, which is her other book for adults. And I don't know if you've read Summer Sisters.
I haven't.
So people like In the Unlikely Event, but people love Summer Sisters. Mm. I think you would really love Summer Sisters.
This whole conversation is making me just feel like I need like a Judy Blume fix really badly, because it's been way too long.
Yes.
Yeah. We need to talk to Judy.
That would be amazing.
Can you imagine? I would die.
I can. I will. My first trip will be to travel to her home in Florida.
Yeah.
If it makes it easier for her.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No.
Judy, call us.
Yeah, please call us. Just call us. No, but it's funny that you say that, because like, not only did I spiral on her work, I spiraled on Judy Blume, and I just watched all of these different interviews. And one that really stuck with me was a panel she did for In the Unlikely Event. She was talking to the panelist, who was talking about how, like, you know, you've had a career of writing controversial work, like stuff that people consider controversial.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that? I don't remember quite what the question was. And Judy Blume's answer was, I don't think anything I've written has been controversial. Like, to great applause.
Yeah. Because
she's known for writing, like, about getting your period, about, like, experiencing your body for the first time. Like, things that are not controversial. But when she was writing them, of course they were.
Yeah. I have heard her give that answer to that question. This is, like, a weird full circle moment. And I'm not going to remember what year it was. Very, very early in my career, I want to say it was like my first job as a librarian. I went to a conference and there was a panel discussion on YA books. And John Green was on the panel, and I had not read any of his books. It was It was the year Looking for Alaska came out.
Oh, okay.
And I've forgotten who the second panelist was. And then the third person was Judy Blume.
No way.
And I went because I like YA and because Judy Blume was there. And I did not know who John Green was.
Love it. Now he's
like,
on your list.
I know, right? Like, he wasn't, it was the year Looking for Alaska came out. She was asked a question similar to that. And I have heard her give that answer, you know, and she's just like, I write books, people decide that they're controversial. And like, that says more about those people than it does about me. And it was a lovely panel, and all of the answers were super thoughtful. And then the moderator at the end was like, oh, now we're going to go down and like, does anybody like have anything that they want to say, like a closing? John Green goes, can I like come up to the mic? Because there was like a center mic and then they were at a table and the moderator's like, yeah. And he walks up there and he was like, Mom, I'm on a panel with Judy Blume.
Oh.
And then he turns to her and he was like, can we take a picture after this?
Oh my gosh.
And she was like, yes, of course. And of course, everybody in the audience was like totally eating it up.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I completely forgotten that even happened until just this moment. It was fun.
Oh my gosh. Our two spirals coming together.
I love it.
Me too. I also like, yeah, I think she is celebrated for all the right reasons. And something else that I really like about her books is that she is not afraid to make me really frustrated. Like,
mm-hmm.
there are aspects of both Summer Sisters and in the Unlikely Event that like are open-ended that I can tell would like really piss off another reader because I want that to be like tied up nice and perfectly and not like in an open-ended ending way, but just like in the way that life is. Like, sometimes you don't get all the answers. It is paired well with her writing style. I really love Judy Blume. I really love Judy Blume.
I love that.
We're coming to the end.
Yes, my last one. And I saved this one for last because you set me off on the spiral.
Oh, I love sending people into spirals.
So we interviewed Jessica Strasser when her book came out this year, which was A Million Reasons Why. We talked about it in the first episode. It was like one of my anticipated reads for the year. Yeah. Then we discovered that like Michael knows her, like actually knows her. Yeah. And then we got to interview her and we got to read it before it came out. It was like amazing.
Yeah,
and then I became a crazed fan and was like pushing her book off on like everyone who asked me recommendation for a while. So I had intended, all of that happened pretty early in the year and I had intended to read more of her books, but not gotten to it. And then I texted Michael from the bookstore the week before I went on vacation. And I was like, hey, should I buy this? And you were like, no. I was like, should I buy this? And you were like, no. And then you were like, why don't you grab another Jessica Strasser book? And I was like, oh, duh, obviously. So I grabbed two of her books when I was there that day. And then, of course, as I've already told this story, I left all my vacation books at home. But that's okay because I downloaded one on audio while I was gone. I Almost Missed You on audio.
Oh, Almost Missed You. That's her debut, I think.
I could not tell. I would not have guessed that. And I really loved it. And I have Forget You Know Me.
Mm-hmm.
I have the hardback and I need to read it. And I know that the one I have read and the one I haven't are both big book club books.
Yeah.
And I think having read two of her books now, like I really get it.
Yeah.
Like she just looks at like complex situations complexly.
Yeah.
You know, people are not good or bad. But here's the thing I figured out that I really love about her writing. She is so skilled at like grabbing your attention slowly.
Oh my gosh. Such a good way to put it.
Revealing what characters know or think as the plot moves towards its climax. I don't know. Her books beg to be discussed. And like none of the characters know all the things that are going on. And the progression of the book is sort of like bringing the picture into focus. And I think that's what I have liked about both the books I have read and I'm hoping is a component of the third book, because I just really liked her writing style and how she did that. And the books, like, even though you say that, like, the books are not the same. You're not going to be like, oh, I just read this. They're completely different.
Yes.
Just using the same approach. And the other thing that I think is interesting and has sort of come through as a ribbon in our conversation today is she kind of leans into the concept of fate and how not so much like, do you believe in destiny or fate or not?
Yeah.
But there are so many coincidences and things that happen in life, like our spirals coming together. Right. And she really interestingly explores how people feel when that happens, not whether or not it's true. And I think that is a really kind of fresh and interesting take. Her books are fun. I like them.
I love how the way you put that, because what I love about Jessica Strasser's writing style is that the way her books start have so much energy, and mm-hmm. you always think it's going a certain way or going yeah. to be a certain pace. And it's a little bit more like when you like slam on the brakes really quickly, but then you don't come to a full stop. You just yeah. kind of, you like continue to move a little bit, is the way her books read, like A Million Reasons Why. It starts like pretty much at the very point where they learn that her dad has another daughter.
Right. And you think like that's the big thing in this book.
Exactly. And then
but
it's like,
it's not.
and you're going to be patient. Like, we're going to get there, but yeah. you're going to get a lot of character
but
out of me.
But it's not gimmicky.
Exactly. Like, these are complex character stories. And I think that, like, the way that you put it is really perfect, because it isn't about whether or not they believe in a fate. It's how they react to it when it happens to them. Because at the heart of her stories are characters, are people, mm-hmm. and very character-driven. I love that she's on this list, because it's just been really fun watching her, like, nail it. And yeah. she just released, like, information about the newest one coming out, and you and I bombarded her on social media about how, like, it's uh-huh. going to be ours. We're going to read it first. Thank you very much.
Right? Yeah. 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 I when she said, let me know if you can't, like, get it on NetGalley, I was like, oh, don't worry. I will. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't have to tell me.
Don't worry, Jessica. I'm going to follow up.
I like that you said, like, you couldn't tell it's a debut, because I have always thought her writing has been very consistent, and mm-hmm. I think it's because of her experience, and you know, she was the editor-in-chief of Writer's Digest for so many years, and I think she's just taken her time, like, honing in on her craft, and it shows in all the work she does.
Yeah. And I have to say, I know that this isn't necessarily something that she has influence on, but also the narrator for the audio on Almost Missed You nails it.
That's big, though.
So good. I know. Yeah. Especially now that you tell me it's a debut, gosh, you know, I mean,
yeah. I hope she listens.
No. Hi, Jessica.
We're going to do a year in review episode, but part of my 2022 goals is to do more rereading of authors who I have loved, who have only read once. Mm-hmm. And her books are on that list, because I've only read her stuff one time, and I really want to return to them.
Well, and now that you've also changed my mind on having 8 million books in my house, I can loan them to you.
There you go.
But they're definitely not going to be pristine with no jackets still. That's it's not okay, a like, thing that's happening. And that's never not going to be funny to me.
Well, since I've always only ever had 50 billion books in my house, wouldn't you know it, I already own them.
That is perfection.
So it all works out.
I love it.
This has been so fun. It's so easy just to get wrapped up in, like, being very optimistic, positive, only talking about books we love all of the time. But I like exploring sides of authors who I love, who mm-hmm. I've spiraled on, and whose work, some of their works I've thought were just okay, and some of their works are some of the best books I've ever read. And that yeah. offers me the perspective to be like, be kind to these actual alive human people who are like, don't
Seriously.
Owe me anything.
Right. Yes. I hate when I'm on social media and people are like, authors are like, hi, you don't have to like my book, but if you didn't yes. like it, please don't tag me in your terrible review of it.
Yes. Like, hate the book. Don't tell me about it.
Right. Like, I just don't think my self-worth could handle that. Authors really put themselves out there. And gosh, don't, yeah, no. yeah don't
my
do that.
My self-worth is on, like, red alert right now. Couldn't take anymore. Anyway, we will have all of these books on our bookshop, bookshop.org/shop/bookapod. If you're interested in any of these authors or their titles, if you've had any author spirals, we want to know about them. What book did you read first? What did you read next? How did it hold up? Shoot us an email at info@bookapod.com. Follow us on social at bookapod at Instagram and Twitter and TikTok. Also, check us out online at bookapod.com. One day I'll get used to this.
You do a great job. Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.